are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
I think that one of the real highlights for me was there was a little boy from a primary school in Bolton and he'd not taken his hoodie off for a couple of years. Right. And when he came to one of these mental health conferences that we ran, he wanted to put on the special GM Mentally Healthy Schools t-shirt. And his teacher said, oh, no, that, you know, he's just not going to take his hoodie off. And because he really wanted to be a champion of mental health, because he knew how much he found it a challenge, he took his hoodie off. The staff couldn't believe it.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Lisa Farthers, Director of Teaching and School and Partnerships at Teaching School Alliance for Learning. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are reducing the digital deficit for students, teachers' ability to adapt in the face of COVID, and the importance of developing teachers for this current world.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am joined by Lisa Farthers. Lisa is the Director of Teaching and School and Partnerships at the Bright Futures Educational Trust. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, how are you, Ross?
I'm very well. It's lovely to connect with you at long last after all these years. Could you tell listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
I can. So, yeah, I'm Lisa. I'm based in the Northwest. I'm part of the executive team on our multi-academy trust, Bright Futures, but I also lead the teaching school, which is called the Alliance for Learning. Quite a big teaching school spanning the whole of the Northwest, really. We work with over 400 schools. We have a maths hub, a SKIT, trained teachers in early years, primary and secondary, and we have a huge school-to-school and CPD offer as well. So I've got kind of a dual role leading that, but also contributing to the exec level stuff on our trust as well. Absolutely love it. In addition to that, I'm a mum.
You're busy. Being busy is an understatement, is what you're trying to say.
It is. But busy's good.
Right. So what I'll always like to do is just give a little kind of historical context. Could you describe your 16-year-old self to listeners? What were you like at school?
So I was described by my teachers as bubbly, which my parents translated as talking too much in class. I was quite overweight. I had a large group of friends, but I was moody. My parents would say that I was very moody. But I wasn't really, really naughty. I kind of knew which side was the right side of behaviour, and only pushed it a little bit. I hope that my daughter is better behaved than I was.
And how did you get on with your exams? How did you get through that phase of your life?
GCSEs, all right. I knuckled down in the end. I had some really good teachers. I was under quite a lot of pressure from my dad, because my dad is a retired head teacher. And at the time he was still, I think he was deputy head around that time. So I almost rebelled against him a little bit, because he put so much pressure on me to revise and work. And he was a maths teacher, so it was all about maths. So that's why I went down the English route, actually, in rebellion.
At what point in your life did the conversation about being a teacher happen?
So I went to university and studied English and communication studies. And I think it was in my third year, really. I'd always loved my subject, and I'd always liked young people and children. But I was humming and ahhing about whether to be a social worker or a teacher. And I come from a long line of teachers. Two of my aunties are teachers. My dad was a teacher. And I ended up just looking at the length of courses. And to be a social worker, it was 2 years. And to be a teacher, it was one. So that's what swung it.
Fantastic. So tell me a little bit more about your teaching career, your journey, and the kind of opportunity, the roles that you've had in the schools and those types of things.
Yeah. So I did my PGC at Manchester University, English with Drama. A big shout out to John Keane, who I believe is still there. And it was a real privilege, actually, recently to be asked to go back and share my leadership journey with some trainees. And then I did my first 10 years at a big mixed comprehensive in Warrington, on the other side of Warrington, Great Sankey, where I taught English and drama. I had lots of different responsibilities there. I was really lucky. So I had a pastoral role, I had a department role. I even had a secondment, short one, at the local authority around PSHE. I think my favourite role when I was there was being the community outreach director and primary liaison and all that kind of stuff, because we were a specialist engineering college. Absolutely loved that. And then I started looking for senior leadership jobs. And at that school, there were an awful lot of really good middle leaders. So I knew that I'd have to look outside. So I then went on maternity leave with my daughter. And when I was on maternity leave, I secured my first SLT post, which was in a school in Trafford as assistant head.
Okay.
And I was director of specialism, and it was a sports college, which was interesting because I'm not a PE teacher. So it was all, for me, it was all about how we use the messages of sport and wellbeing across the school. And then I progressed to being deputy head, associate head teacher. And then I was looking for a headship. I did a bit of interim headship stuff. And then I saw this role, which was at the time head of teaching school slash co-principal at Bright Futures. And I took that job, absolutely loved it. And the teaching school has now grown. And obviously now I've got a slightly different title, which is director level.
So prior to COVID, could you just give us a sense of the things that you would be doing at that strategic level, you know, for being the director of the kind of ITT school?
Yeah, so I would be going to meetings with lots of partners, doing some CPD delivery, perhaps leading a team of system leaders and going into schools and doing reviews, coaching head teachers, overseeing a number of kind of regional projects. And in a way, you said what were you doing before COVID? I'm still doing all of that, but I've obviously had to learn how to do it very differently.
So on that note, how's lockdown been for you personally before you talk about your work challenges?
Well, personally, oh gosh, honestly, I found it really tough. Both my children were at home. My husband was like a caged animal. He's used to being at work all the time. He decided to take up cycling and bought an awful lot of Lycra in quite a short space of time.
I've done the same.
Yeah, so he was out a lot on his bike, and I was left to do homeschool and a full-time job. You know, it wasn't all bad. There were some nice bits as well, that, you know, there was that period of time when the weather was really nice and we had some nice family time. But I found it quite a challenge, particularly with my 8-year-old son, who just wanted to go on his Xbox. And it was just like, you know, in the end, we managed about 2 hours schooling with him a day. And it reminded me, you know, how much respect I have for those early years and primary teachers out there.
Yeah, absolutely. We went through that whole bell curve. I got the Lycra out. I did virtually nothing. My wife did the vast majority while trying to keep the work coming in, and thankfully switched to online. But, you know, the initial excitement about homeschooling soon dissipated into maybe a couple of hours a day, and then towards the summer term became a real struggle. And we're qualified teachers, and we're
exactly
teachers. So you do think the vulnerable children, parents out there, what a tough gig it would have been. And, you know, your thoughts on the narrative about delivering remote education and laptops and all those types of things?
I think that schools have to have a plan. Well, they legally do now, don't they? But I think that having that backup plan, it is really useful. I think that we've all learned a lot in the last 6 months. I think the Oak National Academy is a really useful resource as a kind of thing to go alongside what individual schools are doing. I think that the schools that are doing it really well are those that have got a sensible approach in terms of workload as well, because, you know, what I've seen at the moment is teachers managing the children they've got in front of them at the same time as having to cater for the children that are at home as well. So I think, you know, everybody can't do everything.
What was your trust's initial pressures at the beginning, and how did it adapt from, you know, March towards July? Your story?
I think at first there were some teachers that adapted really easily, because there are, you know, like in every profession, there are some people that are easier at adapting than others to change. Obviously, there are some teachers that have got an awful lot of digital expertise, and they could very quickly think innovatively about how to change things up. Whereas perhaps, you know, I'm not in the classroom anymore, but if I was, you know, I'm in my 40s, and it took me a while to get to grips with some of the technology that I've had to use for CPD. So I think it's peaks and troughs, really. Mm-hmm. I think some of the challenges for us in some of our schools was around the disadvantage and the children that didn't have access to laptops, iPads, even Wi-Fi. And, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, we won't talk about it, I'm sure, today, because there's too much other stuff to talk about on the list. But, you know, when we think about some of the children that actually are thinking about where they're getting the next food from, it's no surprise that having, you know, access to remote learning wasn't the top of the priority yeah. list. We've had to work with that and be creative, and we had a lot of teachers.
Sorry, I'm interrupting you. It's half term for you today, isn't it?
No, next week.
Oh, you got another week to go. So what's the mood today with the body of your staff, teaching staff?
So we break up today in most of our schools. Honestly, people are absolutely exhausted, like never before. I mean, people are always tired at this time of year, and we normally limp, don't we, that last week towards half term, but mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like it. And I think that head teachers are really tired as well, because really, a lot of senior teams, all they've been doing is managing track and trace internally in school. Yeah. And that pressure of knowing that there's all that other stuff that people are not getting to. And I think the reactive nature of how things are at the moment is just so tiring.
Yeah. The best analogy I heard was a bit like being on a ghost train. One, you know, it's going to happen. You're committed to the ride. But it seems in this case that it's a long ride that we're in for, and we don't know when it's going to happen. And that challenge of managing kids at home as well as physically has become just a daily burden. I know when I was doing cover as a deputy, it was probably one of the hardest jobs to do, you know, strategically as well as day-to-day management, because often the next day something would happen and all your strategy would go out the window. So I can only imagine now with COVID,
yeah,
we just a never-ending chore. I want to talk about workload and well-being. You do a lot of work, so I want to talk about the Greater Manchester Mentally Healthily School program that you do. Can you tell listeners more about that?
Yeah, so this is really exciting, a huge project across Greater Manchester. So it was called the Greater Manchester Mentally Healthy Schools and Colleges Programme, and it was funded by Health. So we had, can't remember the exact figure now, but quite a lot of money to roll out an innovative kind of preventative programme. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we got my teaching school, the Youth Sport Trust, 42nd Street, Place to Be, and obviously our health colleagues around the table and said, right, what can we do? And to cut a very long story short, what we did was we provided 135 schools with a kind of package. So 4 members of staff got mental health first aid training. The Youth Sport Trust did a lot of stuff with students in terms of leadership of mental health and leadership of wellbeing. Place to Be did kind of senior staff training to help schools have a strategic plan for mental health and wellbeing. And 42nd Street provided some one-to-one counselling support for those students that needed the most support. And actually, the impact has been huge. It's made a real difference in terms of culture and ethos. Mm-hmm. But also, what we're seeing now is that some of those students that were trained have gone on to continue to be real ambassadors of mental health. And actually, you know, we didn't know the pandemic was coming at the time we did this, but it really helped set the schools up to have a bit more of an infrastructure around those things and a bit more expertise. I mean, I won't bore you with the stats and stuff, but I'll just tell you very briefly a story about one of the real highlights for me was there was a little boy from a primary school in Bolton, and he'd not taken his hoodie off for a couple of years. Right. And when he came to one of these mental health conferences that we ran, he wanted to put on the special GM Mentally Healthy Schools T-shirt. And his teacher said, oh, no, that, you know, he's just not going to take his hoodie off. And because he really wanted to be a champion of mental health, because he knew how much he found it a challenge, he took his hoodie off. The staff couldn't believe it. And that was the beginning of him growing as a person, really.
Amazing. What impacts this project had on your staff, you know, for workload, their workload and wellbeing?
Yeah, so it's hard to say, because in terms of collecting the data of long-term impact, et cetera, that work's still being done. But, you know, anecdotally, people felt that the mental health first aid helped them focus on their own mental health better, because part of that course really is helping you think about yourself and how well you are mm-hmm. and how much stress you've got in your own bucket and what your own coping strategies are to allow you to help other people. And I had a number of emails from teachers during that training period saying, you know, I know this sounds really dramatic, but that training course saved my life. You know, it couldn't have come at a better point. It made me stop. It made me reassess. You know, I stopped doing some things that I didn't need to do anymore. You know, I started doing a bit more exercise. Okay. So, yeah, it was really nice.
So, on that note, you know, I know you get a lot of satisfaction out of leading ITT, and I've been thinking about emails this morning, that non-stop burden of deleting and replying to emails. What would be your kind of workload top tips, just before we talk about your ITT work, in terms of teachers managing their mental health over the half term and trying to slowly switch off and recharge? You've been in the game long enough. What would be your recommendations?
Well, I think it's a difficult question. What I would say is that some of the top tips come from the way that school leadership is. So for leaders, it's about having a really sensible, you know, approach to workload and marking strategies. And also it's about role modelling expectations. So, you know, a lot of our head teachers will role model leaving school on time on a Friday because that, you know, by itself as an action gives permission for everybody else to do the same. It's about not sending emails really late at night and expecting a reply. It's about the culture. It's about the culture of the place. And I think if you've got the right culture that allows people to say, I'm struggling right now, I can't cope with this, I need a bit of help, I'm not going to be able to get that marking back in, or actually you've asked me to do something and I can't meet that deadline, then I think everything else falls into place. Mm-hmm. In terms of an individual, for kind of, you know, main scale teachers or new entrants to the profession, I think it's about having a really sensible approach to the working day, and you can only do what you can do within a certain time. And, you know, you shouldn't be working till God knows what time at night. You know, you have a working day and you try and do, you know, what you can in that time to the best of your ability. I do think time management is important. And you mentioned emails. We can get sucked into being ineffective at doing other jobs if we've got our email screens open at the same time. And sometimes I have to just shut that down and I have a dedicated time of day where I'll clear emails off. Mm-hmm. I also think that social media pulls people in, isn't it? So putting your phone in a different room while you do a specific task for an hour, you probably get a lot more done if you've not got your phone with you. And some of this is the same advice that I'd give to teenagers as well. Yeah. You know, it's common sense, isn't it? But I think there are some kind of strategies that you'll know of yourself in terms of reducing marking and things like that. So whole class feedback, you know, not marking every piece of work, really thinking about the things that you can pick up and talk to people about rather than sitting there with a pen. Does that help?
Yeah, no, it does. It's loads of strategies. So in terms of your ITT work, just before we came online, you said you're very satisfied with that work. So tell us, give us a little kind of overview of the things that you're doing, the projects you're working on, how you've also supported all your trainees or your groups of people through COVID particularly.
Okay, so kind of under the umbrella of the teaching school, there's an awful lot of different things going on. So you mentioned projects then. So just to give you a little bit of an insight into some of the projects before we talk about the ITT and the work of the skit. So we are currently a DfE RSHE Train the Trainer Hub. So we're currently giving training to 400 schools around the new RSHE curriculum and work with heads of PSHE, finding that really, really rewarding because what it does is it brings people together. Mm-hmm. And it allows everybody to say, you know, we don't have all the answers, but what we are going to do is work together and work through this collaboratively. And I think that those partnerships and networks are really important. In terms of our ICC work, so we've got a skit. And the reason that we train early years primary and secondary is because we believe that there ought to be a really strong pipeline of new entrants to the profession in all those phases. The reason that we started early years, which was our most recent one, is because, you know, as a parent, that is the most important part, getting it right early on, you know, catching the children early. And you can only do that if you've got really highly skilled practitioners in that area. Mm-hmm. And for me, having, you know, high quality teacher training for early years practitioners is crucial. And then we've got primary and secondary, and we have some niche routes into teaching as well. So we do the researchers in school. We're currently just looking at the teaching apprenticeship route. We've got a brilliant skit team. And in terms of, you know, job satisfaction, you know, it is the best profession in the world. I'm still really passionate about being a teacher and being in education. You get the chance to make a difference every single day. And so many people go to work and can't say that. So for me, it's really, really rewarding when I've got, you know, a load of new trainees, and I know that they're really excited about their careers, and then, you know, they do a year with us. And what's really nice about our program is that they're actually in school from the beginning. And that brings a lot of strength, because we've got some amazing...
Tell me some of the projects that you're working on, you know, what before or during COVID, I'm sure, but just give us an overview of some of the key things you're doing.
Oh, God, I've got a massive long list. So we are a girls' football super hub.
Right.
So, yeah, we've been designated by the FA, so that's about innovation and partnerships and really improving access to not just... increasing participation of girls football, but also thinking about the different careers in sport. So we're using our PE and sports hub to try and galvanize interest and partnerships from schools in that. What else? We're supporting probably about 30 schools at the moment with different school to school support packages. Mm-hmm. And I have oversight of those at a strategic level.
How has that changed during COVID particularly?
So during COVID, so we still continue to support schools, and what we found was that some of the work that, for example, might be around helping schools improve curriculum or subject knowledge in an area, or perhaps change a strategy or a policy, we were able to do some of that remotely. In terms of training as well, we managed to move 90% of our training online, and I must admit, I started off lockdown saying, nothing beats face-to-face CPD, absolutely nothing. There's no way that we can do X, Y, and Z online. You know, it just won't work. You can't build relationships. And to a certain extent, I do think nothing beats face-to-face CPD. But I have to admit, I have been pleasantly surprised by how much you can do online, actually. Mm-hmm. And also using some of the functions on some of these platforms enables that dialogue that I didn't think existed at the beginning to happen. So,
I've been doing webinars for 10 years, but obviously through COVID myself, everything's online, and even new clients or new schools, and, you know, by, you know, week 5 or week 10, you know, when you're checking in with people every week, you start to, you know, digital friends, and it's very interesting what you can achieve through a computer link. We're kind of getting to our 20-minute barrier, and this is where I start to throw in loads of interesting and quick-fire questions, Lisa, to you. And my aim is to catch you off guard.
Oh, God.
But I'm sure you're familiar with Timmy Mallett. I like to kind of just get people to respond really quickly and have a little bit of fun. But also there's lots of important things we've discussed and some very serious and important topics such as teacher wellbeing and teacher workload. So if you're happy for me to kind of plough on with some of them... let's get started. So my first random question is, I haven't been to Warrington for maybe 15 years or so, where would we go if I came, you know, obviously COVID aside, but where would we go out to look around the town, look at some historical insights if we had 24 hours together?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd take you to the spin class that I teach. That's at the local gym, so you might want to get your lycra out. Then we might go into Warrington Town Centre and go to the museum. I might take you down the main street where the Golden Gates are. Then we might go and do a bit of shopping, and then we'd head back to Stockton Heath, where there's loads of lovely restaurants, and we'd be able to sit, not socially distance, and have a bottle of wine. How's okay, that?
Fantastic. If you did it all again, would you train to teach PE or train to teach English and drama?
Still trained to teach English and drama. I was absolutely hopeless at PE, and any of my PE colleagues would howl at that question.
What books are you reading at the moment?
So I'm currently reading a book called Bounce about talent development. My husband's a performance tennis coach, and he read it and put it
Matthew
next to the
bed. Yeah, Matt Matthews. Yeah. Fantastic book. You'll enjoy it. What's on your desk today? What's your project to finish for half term?
Oh, God, you don't want to know. So I don't know if you know much about the changes to teaching schools, but there's some national changes coming, and teaching schools are ending next year, and teaching school hubs are being rolled out. So I'm in the process of writing bid applications.
Another bid, yeah. I've done many bids in my career. And what would be your top tips for people wanting to go on a secondment or schools looking to develop the range of flexible working for staff?
First of all, I'd say that spending time in another school is the best CPD that you can ever have. So whether that's short-term secondment or long-term secondments, I think that you get so much back You see your own school through fresh eyes when you go back to your own school. And even in the most challenging schools that you might end up supporting, there are always absolute golden nuggets of good practice in every school. So I would be fully up for that. In terms of flexible working, I think we've learned a lot about that through COVID, actually. My team are all working remotely at home. They're working really, really hard. There's, you know, some flexible things there that you wouldn't have thought. So, you know, I could take my dog for a walk at lunchtime, then come back and carry on. And I also think that flexible working is something that we ought to think about as a good employer for our staff, that are parents, sure. Particularly women.
What advice would you give your 16-year-old self?
Be less moody and realise what great parents you had.
Okay. Thoughts on the early career framework?
I think it's a brilliant framework. I think that idea of supporting our early career teachers for 5 years instead of one or two is really important. If you think about the numbers of you know, teachers leaving the profession, we really like it. We think it's very helpful.
Homeschooling, lessons learned. What advice would you give for everyone else? You know, the possibilities of lockdown and isolation still taking place. To be kinder on ourselves in terms of that perfectionism.
Yeah, absolutely. To be kinder to yourself. To you can't replace a teacher. So just keeping some learning ticking over is good enough. And actually having some time on your own during lockdown, I think, you know, for your own sanity is really important.
What's your biggest career achievement you're most proud of?
Oh, wow. Probably the growth of the teaching school, because I think it's, you know, partnerships and networks and collaboration, I think that they're the things that improve schools, because, you know, you can't do it on your own and it's about building it together. And I think probably one of my biggest achievements is that I've brought schools together, I've brought people together in a sustainable way.
Fantastic. Now, I know you're already doing your dream job, but if you had that off the wall job that you could have done, what would it have been?
If I'd had a decent singing voice, I would have loved to be a Spice Girl, but I don't. I always thought that I might be an actress. Recently, I've considered changing career and going into politics, because I think that there are some people that I could do a better job than them.
Fantastic. Cognitive science and research and all this wonderful explosion across the profession. Your thoughts?
I think that, you know, being able to do stuff that, you know, has an evidence base and that somebody else has already done some research around it, and so that you know the impact it's going to have and the parameters, it is really, really important. And I think it gives you power. I like the idea of teachers as researchers as an ongoing thing, you know, being curious. And that's something that we're trying to embed in our training teachers.
And what's your number one tip for new teachers to the profession getting immersed with research?
Join the Chartered College of Teaching.
Okay. Now, you're Warrington lass. Where does your kind of football loyalties lie in that part of the world?
Oh, gosh. So my daughter supports Manchester United. My son supports Nottingham Forest because that's where my husband's from. I've always quite liked Manchester United, but don't tell anybody.
Okay, let's not tell anyone. Okay. Who do you recommend I interview next and why?
So I would recommend that you interview either John Stevens, who's my CEO, because he is amazing, but in an understated way, or Cal Hodgson, who is the principal at Cedar Mount Academy in Gorton. Okay. He's a new head and he's doing an amazing job.
All right, you're going to have to put me in touch with both of them and we'll see what we can do. Where can listeners find out more about your work, your professional work, as well as maybe personal, like Twitter channels, things like that, Lisa?
Yeah, so the Teaching School website is allianceforlearning.co.uk. I am on Twitter at Lisa Fathers AFL, and the Teaching School is tagged into that. So, yeah, you can find me on there.
And my final question, what would you hope to be your legacy?
Gosh, that's a tough one. I hope that schools continue to work together in a collaborative way, and that actually that there's more priority given to teacher training. You know, I've been very disappointed this last week to see that the bursaries for next year in terms of ITC have been reduced.
Yes.
So, you know, I hope that being a part of my legacy is that there's a continued influx of teachers to the profession in Greater Manchester.
Lisa, thank you very much. I'm definitely going to be checking out more about this, you know, your Greater Manchester Mentally Health Programme. It sounds fascinating and highly complex and of great value to our young people. It's almost half term. I wish you all the best and get lots of rest and all the amazing work that you're doing in your trust. So thank you for sharing. Thank you for your time. And thank you for all the amazing work that you do to nurture the next generation of teachers. And I hope to catch up with you physically.
That would be lovely. Thanks very much, Ross.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.